Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. This episode is called You Can Be My Wingman Anytime. I'm your host, Richard Spannersready, and I'm joined by my wingman, Matt Trumpets. How's it going, Matt?
All right. How you doing there, buddy?
Yeah, good, because today is the last time we're going to talk over Skype before we meet live in person, finally, after 4 years and about 300 podcasts together.
Yeah, I know. I'm oddly ambivalent about it, because, I don't want to mess up what we already have by actually meeting you in real life and having us not get on at all.
I suggest we add whiskey and see if that makes things tick along smoother.
I think whiskey makes anything tick along smoother.
I tell you what made this race tick along then, Matt. Can we start by saying that today the Pirelli tyres and the philosophy of the Pirelli tyres did their job? This is exactly what it's meant to do. The two title contenders up front on different tyre strategies. I mean, this is the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah, it did it ish. Ish. It was pretty close. It kind of, in the end, worked out sort of like they hoped, maybe, except for the actual race got in the way. But really, what they want is more than one pit stop. And that's the place where they haven't quite got it all figured out yet.
I mean, it doesn't help at a track like this, which is often described as Monaco without the barriers, because you can do something like Bottas did today, which is make tyres that really you should have got off of last and just sit and park the bus. Because that's all Bottas was doing towards the end, wasn't it? Parking the bus.
Yeah, actually, it was very funny. They mentioned that at the beginning, I believe that the... I'm getting the actual race stuff here. But I think the longest stint they wanted you to run on the sauce was somewhere around 43 laps. And right about lap 60, where it all started to get very interesting, is right when he hit that mark. So, yeah, it was definitely in that sense, Pirelli was on it in terms of the window.
So there you go. It nearly worked. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. I'm also joined by Nick Numbers Alexander making another debut.
You know, you keep using that word, debut. I do not think it means what you think it means.
But... Excellent. Also, we're joined by our very own racing driver, Bradley Philpott. How's it going, Bradley?
It's going really well. Good evening, everyone. Happy to be back on.
And hi to the live stream. This is how to find us. Go to YouTube, search Missed Apex Podcast, click subscribe and the little bell. You'll get a notification every time we go live and you can join the live chat room. Let's talk about this track. Now then, Brad, let's talk about this from a racing point of view, because I was talking on Twitter with deadly rival podcaster Jack Nicholls, and he was complaining that a lot of people on his timeline were saying that they didn't enjoy this race. But to me, this was like a classic F1 strategic battle. It even had crashes for people who need that kind of thing.
A lot over the years, a lot of people have complained that this track is one that you can't overtake at, and it could be processional. But from everything I've seen really this weekend, whether it's the support races or F1 itself, it's not bad at all, really. It doesn't have the massive straights where you can slipstream and outbreak people at the end of the straight, except maybe the first corner. But I think it's actually quite a good track for racing on. I don't think the Monaco without the barriers is actually that fair.
No, because if you look at turn one, there's a few different lines into turn one. There's room for the cutbacks. And then there's a couple of lines around turn three. There's a lot of people going around the outside. Grosjean and Massa did it in the last few years.
Yeah, there's plenty of alternate lines you can take in a few of the different parts of the track. And then if you have some inclement weather, which some of the support races had, it throws even more variables in there.
Yeah, in particular, I found it a bit reminiscent of Abu Dhabi. Of course, it would be the other way around because I believe the Hungaroring predates Abu Dhabi. But in that, we had switchbacks and extensions of battles into turn three where you could cut back and go inside, outside, inside and get round of people. And that's always a nice thing to have.
But Nick, as an actual spectacle, I mean, it was the top four drivers supposedly in the world, but certainly the top four fighting in the championship in the top two teams, all duking it out over the course of that race. I mean, what more could people ask for? You're a token Vettel fan, so obviously you could ask for a little more.
Yeah, sometimes I think that's the only reason you have me on here. I thought it was interesting that you chose to use the word classic, because I actually used that word to describe it to a friend who was unable to watch, and that it wasn't the classic F1 race that is for the history books and that we're always going to watch the replays 10 years from now, but it was like a very typical F1 race, and that you had different strategies. You were kind of waiting for it to play out. You pressed pause, you went and made breakfast, you came back to it, that sort of thing.
Actually, yeah, I'm glad you corrected me there. Classic is the wrong word. Classic kind of means, yeah, one that we will play back throughout history. Typical is definitely the one I would like to use, because I think for me, if you didn't enjoy this kind of battle over the course of an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes, then you're going to be disappointed a lot of the time, because this is a lot of what F1 is that waiting game, that cooking towards something, the different strategies converging. And quite a lot of the time, nothing happens, but today did. But a lot of things happened in qualifying as well, Matt. Wow, did that weather mix things up? I think going into the weekend, we thought this was going to be a Ferrari-dominated weekend.
Well, yeah, I mean, the weather can always mix things up, but I think what was most striking about it was not only did the advantage that Ferrari most clearly had utterly evaporate in the weather, but also that the advantage that Red Bull has supposedly had also seemed to be utterly and completely gone, with Ricciardo out in Q2 and Verstappen able to do no better than seventh. And man, was he a bit complaining on the radio about it.
So basically, Max is terrible in the wet now.
Yeah, clearly his talent in the wet has gone, and the car is exactly the same as it was last year.
Now, that's right. Now, Red Bull did seem surprised by that, and they seemed like they would be more confident given what they did with Ricciardo, because they had him basically out of sync. So everybody else went on to slicks, didn't they, at first. Vettel was out on intermediates in Q2, and basically Ricciardo was left stranded when the rain came down, and then he couldn't do anything about it despite just going round and round and round. I mean, it was a fascinating qualifying session, but Ricciardo was the only one of the top six to miss out.
Yeah, although to be fair, that had nothing to do with his tires and everything to do with your favorite driver, Lance Stroll, who, having made it through into Q2, promptly went and smashed his wing off directly in front of Ricciardo. And from that point, the conditions just kept getting worse and worse. And we never really saw a representative time from him, if we're going to be fair to him that way.
It's a shame for Lance Stroll, because everyone was talking in Q3 and they were saying, oh, look, he's done it at other places. He did it in Monza in the wet. You know, maybe this is his strength. And then, woo, off he goes.
Yeah. To be fair, there's way less turns in Monza.
But yeah, I mean, even in Q3, Daniel Ricciardo was struggling, and he only just about got that time, didn't he? And when everyone was changing onto slicks, they were basically fueled up for the whole of Q3. He was on softs, which is, you know, the middle of the three compounds. So Red Bull must have been quite confident, but he only just scraped out of Q3.
Yeah, I think I remember them saying that he was down a set of ultra softs, and that's why they had put him on softs for that stint, and they were hoping to get a time in before the rain, and it just didn't quite work out the way they wanted.
Just to clarify, I don't actually think Ricciardo made it into Q3. I think it was just Verstappen. I think
Q2. So I got confused between Q1 and Q3. So yeah, he was struggling to get out of Q1 and didn't make it into Q3. He got knocked out in Q2. But Brad, I do want to talk to you next because Hamilton pulled off that great pole lap. I don't know if you caught him talking to Anthony Davidson about the different racing lines he took, because it was very similar to what we did at Daytona, where you were advising me all the time, keep going around the outside, go around the outside. Then at the end of the race, you're like, oh no, it just happened to not be the case here.
Yeah, I actually didn't catch that entire interview with Anthony Davidson because, and I'll go into this later, I was at Jeansy Van Jeans' house today, and I was helping him with something in the kitchen whilst that was on. But I saw that he was describing in detail, and I saw it for myself in qualifying. When we rode on board with Hamilton, he was taking drastically different lines to a lot of drivers. Very, very early turn-ins, and they were working. And I saw also Lando Norris doing a similar thing in the feature race of the Formula 2 this weekend as well. Really similar early lines. And it's in a similar way to going around the outside is a part of the track that's not used very often. So it just seems to offer that bit more grip in the wet. Very early turn-in seems to do a similar thing. And the shorter lines just seem to work very well here.
Nick?
In the wet also, I can't remember which commentator it was, but one of them made a comment, you know, of course, where was Max Verstappen? We would expect him to put it on pole here. And they also made some sort of wrong assertion that I would like to let Brad correct, in that when it's seriously raining and you're on the full wets, that a lack of power doesn't hurt you anymore. And that just sounds wrong. Wouldn't it be that more power would always be better in any condition?
Yeah, essentially, as soon as the wheels have stopped spinning, as soon as you have traction, you want more power. That's it. So you'll quite often hear people in karting, rental karting, say, oh, in the wet, it doesn't matter whether you've got the kart with the best engine. It doesn't matter right up until the point where the wheel stops spinning. As soon as you've got traction, of course, you want all the power that you can get.
Are you telling me that me being a bit heavier at the moment with some summer holiday weight isn't going to help me if it rains at our karting event as well?
It's less of a disadvantage, but by the looks of the weather, actually, we're going to have a nice sunny weekend next weekend.
Yes, game on. Let's talk about this race, though, the Hungarian Grand Prix. Why don't we just hand it over to Matt to summarize quickly how the race was won and lost?
All right, so to me, there's about four crucial points to this race. Once we get past qualifying, where Hamilton put in that amazing lap to give himself the advantage of being in front and driving the bus. And of course, the start is where we have to look first. Mercedes was able to maintain its position and therefore control of the race. And crucially, we know from a post-race interview, they were able to establish the gap between Bottas in P2 and Hamilton in P1 that Mercedes strategists wanted to give each driver their best chance at maximizing their race. The second point, and this is really critical, is about lap 26 when Hamilton pitted. He was coming up on that train that was being led by Ocon, and Mercedes made the decision to bring him in before he got to it. This put him out behind Vettel, and he trailed Vettel into that very same train. Now, Vettel got there around lap 39, and crucially, he wove his way through that traffic before they brought him in, just after they brought in Raikkonen for his second stop. Raikkonen's stop was slow. His stop was slow, and the combination of that traffic, the time lost as Hamilton was coming up on him and not in that traffic, plus the slow stop, put Vettel behind Bottas and gave Mercedes the absolute win because it put Bottas back between him, and it was so difficult to pass even with the tires. It was pretty much done. And that was where the race really was won and lost.
Yeah, I'm glad you focused in on that key moment because I really felt like Mercedes had kind of thrown it away by unleashing Vettel, because there was a great part at the front of the race. I mean, Nick, you must have been spitting feathers after turn one because you had Hamilton cruising off into the distance, Bottas just getting further and further behind, and Seb just being really held up. And he was just in a proper Bottas train.
I'm really not sure I understand your idiom, but yeah, it was feeling like it was going to be difficult to overtake, that P3 was going to be the best maybe that you could hope for, just damage limitation mode. But, you know, again, with it raining and qualifying, with the free selection of tires and the alternate tire strategy, I knew that I should wait and see, maybe something could be on. And later it became more and more hopeful, if you will.
No, you're Googling what idiom means. I know all the words. Matt, the fact is, though, that once Vettel was unleashed, it really did look like Vettel's race to win. Because, like I said, like, I feel like Mercedes got suckered a little bit. Kimi Raikkonen came in quickly, or early, and Bottas then jumped to cover off an unleashed Vettel. Like, I was going mad at home. I was like, why would you do that tactically? Surely Bottas had a bit more time, or were Mercedes kind of not admitting that they were holding up Vettel at this point?
Well, it's not so much about them holding up Vettel. It's about thinking about who you're really racing. Remember, of them all, Vettel started on the soft tires. So at that point, Bottas wasn't really racing Vettel per se. What he was trying to do was get the most time out of his tires as he could. And that was going to be relative to Raikkonen, because the thing that Mercedes didn't want to have happen was they didn't want Bottas behind Raikkonen. That's the thing they wanted to prevent. So when Raikkonen came in on lap 15 and out into at the end of lap 15 going into 16, that was within the pit window that Pirelli had set for the ultra soft switching to the medium tire. Now, as it was, Raikkonen went out on the softs, and that's what Mercedes chose to put Bottas on as well. But he had, at that point, the same compound as Vettel, but newer. So he should have been able to make time on Vettel during that period and not lose anything to Raikkonen, who was already behind him.
Hmm. So you're saying that Bottas was thinking about racing Kimi Raikkonen?
Well, I think yeah. Bottas was thinking about things like, what's my diff setting for this turn? But the Mercedes strategists were looking to put him in an optimal position that should have resulted in him being ahead of Vettel after Vettel's stop. That's really what they wanted to do. And they were deep enough into the race at that point that they felt like they could get away with it.
See, I don't see that, because Vettel clearly had a lot of pace. And as soon as they unbottled him, they must have suddenly realized that Vettel was going to create that pit gap to Bottas.
Well, no, I mean, think of it this way. You have Lewis and Bottas on the same compound tires. Now, Mercedes, we know after the fact, wanted a 4-second gap between them. But as we watched the race unfold, it was clear that Lewis was on top of his tires and Bottas was gapping him off rather considerably. It was plus 10 seconds, I think, when he came in. If maybe even up to 14 seconds. It was 14 seconds. Yeah, that's what it was. And so if you're looking at this, you know that as Bottas, you're holding up Vettel. Vettel probably has more pace in the tires at that point than you have in your tires. So holding up Vettel is a good thing for Mercedes. But the more laps you hold him up, but the more laps you run slow, once Kimi pits, the closer Kimi gets to being in front of you when you pit. So you have to look backwards at Raikkonen in your pit window, because you know when you pit, Vettel will be ahead of you.
You guys are much better at keeping track of what's going on with the crazed mess of pit stops and gaps than I am. I think I was just focusing on how much Hamilton was extending his gap at the front and marveling at you know, it just seemed like it was going to be an easy race for him. So I'm really interested in the way you guys are describing how Bottas really facilitated that.
The point I wanted to make was that on lap 20, Hamilton and Vettel were on equal times. And as that continued, Hamilton started to lose time to Vettel. Vettel's tires were now becoming faster than Hamilton's ultra soft tires. And that's why that was the other reason it made sense to go ahead and get Bottas off of him, because Raikkonen was on new tires and he would have been taking similar amounts of time out of Bottas and coming into his pit window. And they just wanted that to not be a possibility. They didn't want Raikkonen ahead of Bottas.
Okay, so probably the key point then, the one you covered in the summary, is when we get to this phase of about lap 35 to 37, we're getting to the crossover where Sebastian Vettel is starting to lose ground. Not only are his tires starting to wear towards the end of that soft stint, Lewis Hamilton's starting to heat his up and he's starting to pick up. And like you said, he hit the traffic. So then we came to this kind of crunch point, because Sebastian Vettel didn't want to come in too early to go on to ultras. But we saw the gap. It wasn't the gap to Hamilton so much. It was the gap to Bottas. Would he come out behind Bottas? And I was calling to you guys. I was saying, look, if that gap gets down below 20 seconds, I guarantee they're going to pick Kimi Raikkonen. because they saw Mercedes flinch and cover him off with Bottas before, and they might hope that they would do that again. And this is where it's fascinating, Nick, because your team, Ferrari, absolutely sacrificed Kimi Raikkonen straight away. As soon as that pit window came down, Kimi Raikkonen came into the pits, but Bottas didn't follow. It's a real difference between those two teams.
Yeah, but is it? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you want to get into this now or later, but Bottas was definitely playing the number two driver role today and was actually seemingly not very happy about it for once, whereas in the past he's just kind of, I think, maybe been happy to be part of the team and happy to have a contract extension. But now that that's all sorted, it seems like he's ready to race, especially after the restart at the last weekend.
Guys, can you see any other way Mercedes could have played this? Because they obviously felt that they didn't have the ultimate legs to just beat Ferrari in a completely straight fight. So it felt to me as well, Nick, like Bottas was kind of sacrificed quite early in a similar way to what Ferrari tend to do with Raikkonen. Did they have another option? Was there another way? Because ultimately, and I'm sure we'll come onto this later, Bottas's problems later on were in a large part led by the fact that he had to stop so early to try and facilitate this.
Yeah, see,
in a large part, yeah, entirely.
Yeah, sorry, Nick. I think that they had two opportunities to sacrifice Bottas. The first one was Kimi Raikkonen came in. So do they allow Bottas to cover off Kimi Raikkonen because they believe he's really racing Kimi Raikkonen? And in that occasion, they said, we'll do what's best for Bottas. We'll cover off Kimi Raikkonen. The second opportunity they had was then when Bottas's tires were running out, Kimi had gone onto new tires to try and pull Bottas into a second stop. Now, do they leave Bottas out on aging tires to hold up Vettel, or do they give him a chance to go and race his own race on a fresh set of boots? He probably would have pitted out ahead of Kimi as well. And on that occasion, they then went and sacrificed him. And I think that is an out-and-out sacrifice, Brad, to say, right, now that it's towards the end of the race, you just sit in front of him as long as you can.
Yeah, and that really is the kind of thing we see Ferrari do a lot. And my next question then is, they say that there's no number one driver at Mercedes, but if the roles were reversed and Hamilton happened to be the guy in second, would they have made Hamilton do the same thing? Or would they have come up with a different strategy that didn't disadvantage Hamilton so much? Would they have hung him out to dry in the same way? Because I don't think they would.
Right. That's interesting. Matt, I'm going to have a stab at this and see if you agree with me. I think in that first set of pit stops with Kimi Raikkonen then pitting, would they have covered off Lewis Hamilton in that way? No, they'd have kept him out ahead of Sebastian Vettel as a roadblock for the rest of the race. That's what I think.
Okay, here's what I would say to that. It would depend on his lap times. If he was running similar times to Bottas, they would have brought him in, no doubt about it, because he was going to do nothing but lose time to Raikkonen at that point. And I think that's a clear, easy, tactical decision, and there's just nothing to be done about it. For the second one, leaving him out when Raikkonen pitted the second time, it made more sense to leave him out because you'd already seen evidence that the fresh tires weren't going to make that kind of a difference.
Well, they did, didn't they? Because Vettel was able to get past.
No, I'd say critically, the real call was after the virtual safety car, where they could have brought him in and he would have lost a single place to Vettel. Because I don't think at that point Raikkonen was all the way up on them. Although if I'm wrong, I'm happy to be wrong about that because I didn't check it before the show. But to me, bringing him in during the virtual safety car and putting him on fresh tires, that would have left Vettel free to go after Hamilton to the end of the race, but would have absolutely protected him against Raikkonen getting by him and kept him from having to drive outside Pirelli's recommendations on the stint length for the soft tire. They chose not to do it because up until then, he'd done a good job of defending and because of things that had happened in previous races. But then we saw how it actually played out in the race. So hindsight is always 20/20.
Brad, you're arguing with people in the chat room. What are they saying about this? Do they think Bottas was hung out to dry?
Well, kind of yes and no. Some people had mentioned that telling Bottas to hold station in Germany was a clear indication that he was a number two. But I was just saying that I don't think that really is the same. I think that was an end of race, low risk decision. I think this was a very early decision in the race, but it really does boil down to, and I agree with what the guys in the chat room are saying, it boils down to who was faster? If Bottas was as quick as Hamilton, if he was able to maintain that same pace, things would have been different. It's not that Mercedes are favoring Hamilton. It's that they're favoring the driver who is able to do the job at the time. And it was Hamilton this time, and it does tend to be Hamilton.
Yeah, which makes Mercedes' job a little bit easier. But Matt, I think that as the season goes on, they go, oh yeah, we did favour the faster driver, but now we're just favouring Hamilton.
All right, counterpoint. Bottas, we know he likes to go slow at the beginning and speed up at the end. So it was very interesting to me to see him turning suddenly almost 3/4 of a second faster as Vettel came into the pits. He turned two fast laps in a row that was also absolutely part of Vettel being behind him at the end of the pit stop. So he might be slow, but he's not slow, if you know what I mean.
And then they had a little bit of luck with the pit stop, which, Nick, disastrously, that was two bad pit stops for both the drivers. They had one each. And the question I want to ask you is, do you think, had they not had that pit stop, how would Vettel have gone, assuming he got out ahead of Bottas?
If Vettel's stop was not slow, if it was a normal time, he still would have finished P2, I think, but he wouldn't have ruined Bottas's race in so doing.
Oh, that's interesting.
Whose fault is it later?
I might have an ally in whose fault is this? Oh, this is going to be fun. All right, then. Let's just clear up then the team orders debate, because I'm quite excited to see clear number twos in a two-way title fight, if that makes sense. Brad, do you remember me giving you that suggestion that we would have a karting race, but it wouldn't be who won? We'd all bring our other halves who are not into karting, and it would be all about who could get their partner up front.
Yeah, I do. I actually really like that idea. We need to do that.
But it's the team element, Brad. It's such an individual sport, but we've got a real possibility this season that the number twos are going to decide the driver's title. And I'm quite excited to see how that plays out. I'd like to see both teams go, do you know what? Yeah, this is what we're doing. This is the way of F1 this season.
Yeah, I really don't like speaking about these guys as number twos, but it comes to a point in the season where, you know, you kind of understand what the average performance is. I think you refer to it like this, you know, this is the mean. You tend to see these guys are behind the kind of the number ones, even if they're not officially called number ones. So I think we have to accept it from this point onwards. More often than not, Vettel's going to be in front of Raikkonen. Hamilton will probably be in front of Bottas. So yeah, I'm actually interested to see whether Bottas can get ahead of Raikkonen in the championship and how that's going to play out.
It's just mathematical probability and reasonableness when somebody's, you know, 40, 50 points ahead of their teammate. At a certain point, even if they have the same skill, luck, whatever, you just have to let one go and you kind of have to pick a horse. And I just was laughing to myself a little bit because Brad's talking about number one driver or whatever you want to call it. You know, they have this same problem with goaltenders in hockey, and they've invented this 1A, 1B way of referring to goaltenders that doesn't offend anybody, but you know everyone wants to be 1A. A?
Yeah, I think there was a Futurama skit where they insisted on being called Team A, and the other one said, oh, well, in that case, we're Team 1. And they could do that. They could have Driver A and Driver 1, and that really mixed things up. But in our series of Nick Alexander notices things, you noticed the interview with Natalie Pinkman and Bottas.
Yeah, I think a lot of people noticed that one. It was Toto was being interviewed right after the race, and he was very happy, obviously, because it seemed like Ferrari's, you know, weekend going in, and he was just so happy that Bottas had been such a good wingman. And then Natalie Pinkman is interviewing Bottas and saying, you know, your boss is so happy with you. He said you were such a great wingman, and he was like, wingman is not a good term. And he was very unhappy about it. And special thanks to Rory Mackay, who's in the chat room. He sent me a link to Valtteri's Twitter, where he immediately backtracked on straying from the public relations line and saying, you know, I misunderstood what he meant, and he would never say anything about that. And the team is happy, and, you know, thanks so much for employing me, basically. And it was really sad to see, you know, that moment of authenticity immediately retracted.
Brad,
can I just defend Toto here for a moment? I do think it's just an unfortunate choice of words, and I don't think he really was meaning to imply that he was a number two. I think if the roles had been reversed, if Bottas had been the quicker driver this weekend, you know, sometimes Hamilton just isn't on it for a weekend. And had Hamilton performed a similar role, I think he would have also referred to him as he did a great job as the wingman today. I don't know whether, as I said before, I don't know whether the wingman, but had he done that job, I think he would have also referred to him in the same way. So I don't think it's quite as bad as it sounds.
Yes. Muna 119 in the chat room would like us all to know that it's Pinkham, not Pinkman. And I find myself in general agreement with Brad. I think Toto was making specific reference to how he rode, how he drove a team race when he realized he wasn't in it for the win and was trying to pay him a compliment.
Yeah.
And chose a word that has unfortunate connotations within the sport.
Exactly. We've all seen Top Gun. And I will just say to the chat room, when you have a less common pronunciation of a common name, like Jake Sanson and Samson, it does happen. Yeah, or Palmer, and Neil Palmer for Palmer. It does, look, occasionally these things are going to get said wrong. I apologize. No offense to Natalie Pinkham or Charles Leclerc.
I've been watching Breaking Bad in my defense.
All right. Okay. Oh, is that got an actor called Pinkman? There you go.
Yeah, Jesse Pinkman's a character. Yeah.
There you go. So yeah, he was immediately ordered basically to go on social media and retract his disappointment. And the Pinkham interview, though, she didn't stop at one. She was like, okay, the wingman, you're the wingman. And he said, oh, that hurts. And she went, yeah, but you are the wingman, aren't you? Like, just twist that a little bit more. Cause he looked proper upset.
It was a bit like me on my last debut on the show for the German Grand Prix when you were like, yeah, but in front of his home fans, that must have really, you know, been completely devastating, right?
You must be so
she
sad.
She apologized to him afterwards.
All right. So look, I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to say, I think Mercedes are putting up a good front. Lewis Hamilton's the number one driver. They realize that. I wouldn't be surprised if the tone is slightly different coming back from the summer holidays. Ferrari are definitely doing it all out. They're not even trying to hide it. But I mean, Bottas and was really doing, he was doing that wingman job. He was literally on the first lap, instead of attacking Hamilton. Hamilton wasn't even trying to block him. Bottas moved right out to the edge to block the Ferraris, Matt, and the Mercedes. It was like they were in formation.
Yeah. And Hamilton actually had an interesting, interview post race where he said that, you know, this is something that they talked about and that he himself was being very mindful in his start to try and not block Valtteri off so that the Ferraris would wind up getting past him, because he said whoever wound up in the first position out of turn one, it was to no one's advantage for Ferrari to be by either of them. So I think they have a thing going where they watch out for each other, and perhaps at a certain point, unlike the Rosberg relationship, it's not yet degraded to the point where they will say one thing and do another. Shall we go with that, perhaps?
Nick?
I just had an idea just now. If I was Mercedes and I was signing Bottas up for a contract extension, or if I was any team really, I would put in a hidden secret clause, whatever, under the table, what have you, that there was a driver's championship bonus that would be split evenly between both drivers, no matter who won it. That way you would incentivize them at a certain point to be like, you know what? You're more likely to win. You go get us the big bonus. Something like that.
Brad, you're a racing driver. Would you concede to the number two spot for a few more quid?
I think once you go past the point where you don't consider yourself able to win, you think it's very unlikely you're going to win. It might incentivize you, but I think everyone is always doing the best job possible anyway. And I think there's only certain situations where a bit of extra money might make the difference. But it's quite a good idea, Nick. I like it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
All right, we're going to have a bit of an argument now about whose fault things are, because there was a couple of these this week after nothing in Germany at all. But first of all, let's catch up with our panel. Nick Numbers Alexander, for those of you who don't know, I think is an accountant or like a book ledger or a librarian or something.
Something to do with beans, yeah. Yeah, I work in an engineering firm now, like you, so I can just drop that on the podcast when it's not relevant at all.
No. I always apply my engineering. How dare you? I always apply my engineering credentials when it's relevant and I try to use some fake authority. It's not fair. Look, Matt does all the strategy and he's a blogger. Brad's a racing driver. He gets to say things. We've got Summers who writes for like a huge, let me have my one thing. Damn it.
Right. And I'm just the token Ferrari fan.
Exactly. Nick, where can people find you online? Because you've got like 3 followers now. You need more.
Yeah, I'm at NickAlexanderF1 on Twitter, and I am trying to tweet stuff about things. So if you want to read about stuff, then you should go there.
And we've also got Bradley Philpott, who races in the VLN and considers himself a Nordschleifer specialist. Have you been making less contact with things of late?
Oh, come on, Spanish. I have like one piece of contact in my entire driving career. And you don't ever let me hear the end of it.
Matt did it
last
time.
It wasn't even my fault.
So I have heard that about you, that you very rarely have those kind of incidents, crashes or contact.
I very rarely had enough money to pay for the consequences. So no, I absolutely don't. I'm very safe. No, I've not been really doing any racing since we last spoke because we've had car issues, but we're back out in 3 weeks. So fingers crossed we'll take the win then.
But there's a bit more racing coming up next weekend. You're going to be joining me and Matt at Buckmore Park for the 3rd Mist Apex Karting event. Oh, I'm so pumped.
Yeah, me too. I'm really, really looking forward to it. It's looming large in my calendar and I've been mentally rehearsing Buckmore Park and where I'm going to pass everyone from my second heat where I start at the back of the grid.
Yeah, so just to explain to people what we're doing, and you'd be more than welcome to pop along if you're in the Kent area, we're actually doing a live podcast recording, which I'm really looking forward to. We've got about 20 or so people coming at the moment. If you want to come along, you can come along. It would help me if you'd email me SpanishReady@gmail.com and just let me know. But we've got an hour and a half slated. We've got some tech segments. We've got some racing segments. You're bringing along a guest as well, Brad.
I am, yeah. My friend Alex Brundle, who's done a bit of racing in his time. He's raced everything from karts, T-cars, Formula 2, and done very well at Le Mans as well. So he's currently, I think, racing in some very high-profile endurance championships. So he should be quite handy, shouldn't he?
Yeah.
And he's really small.
But it's going to be quite good because you two are going to do a little 20-minute masterclass as part of the show. Summers is going to come up and do some tech stuff. He'll do a tech Q&A. And of course, me, Matt and Rainbow Sparkles will be up there doing a bit of a Q&A and a bit of a mid-season review as well. Now, interestingly, though, we've got the Podcast Wars heat. So we've got Mist Apex Podcast as a team, right? We've got Checkered Flag with Jack Nichols and some ringers, including Alex Brundle. So they're going to be quite handy. We've got For F1 Sake Podcast, who, quite frankly, they sounded optimistic at first, but listening to them more and more, I think they're a bunch of chances. I think we're going to swamp them, no problems. Yes, that's right. I'm laying the smack down. And we've got the Norfolk F1 drunks who record from a pub, and they will be drunk. So they're going to be swerving a lot. They're not going to be taking the optimal lines. And also, I've got an extra special advantage in that race because as the team number one, obviously, I'm just going to issue out team orders, Matt.
And we will certainly listen just as well as we do on the podcast.
Nick?
Mist Apex Podcast does not sponsor drinking while driving. Please remember to drink responsibly, and when you drink, never drive.
Don't get caught, kids. I mean, don't do it, kids. Right. Let's talk about whose fault this is.
Whose fault is it?
Oh, man. Because honestly, I was really disappointed in Germany. There was no whose fault is this. We didn't get to argue about anything. And isn't it interesting how race fans can just see things so differently? So what we've got is, coming down the home straight, Sebastian Vettel has got the run on Valtteri Bottas. Valtteri Bottas has a bit of an oversteer on the exit of the turn one, and he's got no traction. Seb's got loads of traction. He's going to go seemingly around the outside of turn two, which we see people do all the time. But actually, instead, he just cuts the nose off the corner, smashes into Bottas, and instantly I'm thinking, whoa, hang on a minute, he's turned into Bottas. He's taken his nose off. This is incredible. And then I've got Brad, Anil, Matt, all telling me straight away, no, you're an idiot. You're stupid. So have we got a 2-2 split here? Who thinks that that is Vettel's fault? A show of hands, it's just me and Nick, isn't it? So here's my case. I'm going to put this to Brad. I think that Vettel never got clear. So he always had part of his car alongside Bottas, and then Vettel just took the apex. And as Matt said on one of these incidences, I'm there, man. He turned in. Well, he was there. There was a car there. Surely he can't turn in.
Right. Before we get into this, I have to lay the ground rules for how you can consistently apply something over any similar incident, so we avoid this potential argument anytime ever again. This can be applied retrospectively to other incidents. You can use my rule here, or anything in the future, or these things today. So
I don't know. That doesn't sound like something that we want to do.
I'm going to do it anyway. I was desperate.
Think we want to argue all the time.
I was desperate to tell this to Spanners earlier. He said, save it for the podcast. So I'm taking my opportunity.
Let's do it.
So I'm going to do this as briefly as I can. I was at Alex Jeansy Van Jeans' house today watching the race, having lunch with him. And on my way home, I was trying to think of a way that I could explain to you why I think certain things about racing incidents, or sorry, incidents that happen in a race. I know we don't have racing incidents here. And I was driving along a dual carriageway with lanes. And I was alongside someone, and we approached a roundabout, and we stayed side by side in our respective lanes round the roundabout. And I thought to myself, if that person on my inside was to wander into my lane, that would be their fault. They would be the one coming towards me. And I thought of a phrase which hopefully sums up succinctly how you can work out whose fault something is. And this is going to completely go against me in this Vettel argument, but I'm going to tell you anyway. It's... The way you judge this is, it's about who is moving towards whom relative to the shape of the part of the track they're occupying. And the way to visualize that is to think of lanes on a roundabout. If you're holding a consistent line and you're alongside someone, you can't move into their lane. If there's any part of them near you, if you move into their lane, and by lane, I mean obviously an imaginary lane, which is the width of their car, then it's your fault. You're the one deviating from the shape of the track. You're moving towards them. If they're staying equidistant between the left and the right side of the track, whether it's on a straight or in a corner, and you're moving towards them, it's your fault. Sorry, Matt, go ahead before I continue this.
I just wish to make the fairly relevant point that no one ever again has any right ever to complain about how long I talk about anything ever again.
Wait, was that Sorry. All you were interrupting for? I was finding it very interesting, Brad. Don't you worry about that mean American. You can punch him in the face when he flies here next week.
It's fine. I've been really trying to think of how to say this as quickly as possible. No, apologies. It's fine.
Can I make
it easier with pictures?
Can I clarify then? Do your lanes only come into effect when they have parts of the car alongside each other, as in if he's clear, obviously he can just take the apex? And is it any part of the car when your lane system kicks in, or a significant part, or half?
So, yeah, really good question. So to answer that, and there are a couple of other caveats, but it kind of holds true for the most part. Think of it as if you're on the road again. If you're the only car there, there's no car around you, use any lane you want. You know, you can take the racing line on a roundabout. You can stay in your lane. You can do whatever you want. But as soon as there's someone next to you, if you move into their lane, if you move into the part of the track that they're occupying, then it's your fault. And to answer the second part of your question there, yes, it's any part of the car. Imagine you're a car on the motorway going in a straight line, and there's a lorry on the left in the left-hand lane next to you, and you're nearly past him, but you decide to move into the slow lane, and you spin yourself off the motorway into the ditch. He had a small part of his lorry front bumper alongside you, but it's still your fault. You drove into his lane. He was just driving in a straight line. And the same applies in a corner, although the lane curves at the same angle as the corner goes. Right. So Just before we finish this, and I promise this is the end, there's one, well, the main caveat to this is, if both cars are straying from the lane, in inverted commas, at the same rate, so say two cars have gone into a corner and they're running wide at the same rate, then effectively both of you are consenting that the lane is the trajectory that you're both following. And it's only when someone then deviates from that that the you hit him or he hit you rule applies. But for the most part, if drivers are under control and they're not both going off their trajectory at the same rate, the lane system tends to apply. So now let's apply that to the first incident today that you've just asked me about. Sorry that took so long.
No, that's fine. Nick, let's get your opinion on this. As a biased and terrible Vettel fan, you must issue.
Break up the rhythm a little bit. So you hear people say a lot of times, and maybe this is a misconception that you can clear up at this time, that they were there first, it was their corner, and since it was their corner, then they're free to take the racing line all the way to the outside. And I'm not, to be very clear, I'm not making the argument that in this particular situation, but when people say things like that, is that just kind of one where you're like, that's not yeah, a rule, that's not a thing?
See, that one doesn't make sense to me when they say, oh, it's his corner. Because say if you're halfway alongside as you go into a corner, that by that rule that you're talking about, Nick, that means they can just turn in whenever they want. And if the guy's half a car behind, he just has to jump out of the way when somebody chooses to take an apex.
Yeah, that's not a thing, basically. That it's his corner relies on the person that is that's further back, the person who's kind of second in the queue, although alongside, it relies on their cooperation. Now that's the position I'm going to try and argue that this wasn't Vettel's fault, because applying my system rigidly, this was Vettel's fault.
So how does this become not his fault?
Right. So this changes to not his fault. Now I just need to clarify. Really, this is the most racing incident that there's ever been, ever. But for the purposes of this podcast, I'm going to argue strongly for Vettel. I'm now his defense lawyer again. He had a very strong right to expect Bottas would have backed out by then. There comes a point where 9 out of 10 situations, if you're that far ahead and there's just a tiny bit of the guy's front wing alongside you, you could probably expect that he won't be there by the time you enter his lane. Bottas would have been sensible to not go for that move. As it played out, it didn't work. Nobody can pass up the inside there. That corner gives an advantage to the driver who's on the outside anyway. We saw the vast majority of passes on that corner this weekend around the outside. Yeah. Bottas's tyres were knackered. There was no need for him to try and stick a nose up the inside. So in Vettel's defense, he had every expectation, really, that Bottas would have been gone.
Okay, I'm going to do some host juggling here. Firstly, chat room, tell me, whose fault is this, Vettel or Bottas? Next, Brad, answer quickly. If Sebastian Vettel had got a puncture out of that, would you have said he was the innocent victim, or would we be saying, whoa, come on, he's brought that on himself?
I think it was a very unnecessary risk he took. Yeah. I think he didn't need to take that apex. He would have still come out in front if he'd just given Bottas his lane. If he'd left him one car's width on the inside, he would have come out of that corner in front, just like everyone else does around the outside, and he wouldn't have even risked damage. So I think Vettel is not an innocent party, really. I think he caused a potential problem for himself.
So Ray Thompson in the chat room, when Brad got started with all this, says that, wait, I'm confused. I thought logic doesn't apply to Missed Apex podcast. JBJ1138 points out that you don't need to turn your head towards the mirrors to see the mirror. You just need to move your eyes. So in case someone's analyzing that to see if Vettel was looking, that's not really fair.
That's exactly right. You don't move your head. You always move your eyes. You keep your head in a consistent position most of the time.
Someone else, I've lost it now, but someone else says that, you know, basically, it was both their faults. They were both clumsy, overly aggressive, and leaving it in too long. And I'd just like to point out that it would seem very sensible for Bottas to back out a little bit, given the strategy, the length of the tires, all that. But also, just you have more to lose with the front wing versus a tire, is basically what.
No, no, no. I don't agree with that. I think losing an end plate is not as bad as losing a puncture in turn two when you've got to waddle all the way back to the track. But Matt, looking at the chat room there, it's about 70-30 are saying it's Bottas's fault. Now, somebody in there said racing incident. We don't do that here. Someone said it's both their fault, which we can totally get on track with. Multiple fault is fine. I like that.
Okay. I didn't know that was an option.
Yeah, no, hang on. Even as I say that now, I don't know. Oh, do you know what? We'll have to put that under arbitration. We'll give it a temporary pass for this week. I think I might have messed up.
To administration. So I think it's partially the mirror's fault as well, because you can't see anything in those things.
Can I just sum up in my real opinion of this is? Okay, I'm going to do it anyway. Bottas had no business trying to repass Vettel down the inside there. He was slower. Even if he managed to get in front there a little bit, wouldn't have come off anyway. So it's a silly place to try and take back a position. He was way too far back. And Vettel took a silly, unnecessary risk in chopping his nose off. So both of them made quite a serious error there. Could have come off worse for both of them.
Right. Well, given the lecture we had at the beginning of this, I'll sum up my view fairly succinctly. If I was Maurizio Arrivabene, I'd be yelling at Vettel for being stupid. If I was Toto Wolff, I'd be yelling at Bottas for being stupid and throwing away third place. But yep. If I'm looking at what happened on track, I got to say the fact that Bottas lost his entire rear wing and Vettel didn't get a puncture tells me that he impacted the rear crash structure behind the diffuser, and that's what took his wing off, and therefore his wing was not in any way, shape, or form alongside the rear wheel of Vettel, which would make it pretty much Bottas' fault, although mitigated by the fact that Vettel coming over would take some downforce off of his front wing and possibly change his braking more than he expected.
Maybe he brake tested him.
Okay, right. Quick feedback from the chat room there. Okay, both being at fault is not allowed. You have to pick one over the other from now on. That was weak of me to temporarily allow that. We are running out of time though, so we'll just all agree that it was Ricciardo's fault in the next incident where he just simply turned in on poor Bottas, who was just picking whatever apex he wanted to pick, just like Nico Rosberg was allowed to pick his apex in 2015. I'm sure this will elicit no further responses. Shall we move on?
We're definitely going to talk about this one, aren't we? Okay, so let's keep it simple. I've given you the structure with which to apply to these incidents. So applying that, let's run through the incident. They're going down the straight together. Everyone's staying in their own lane. No one's having a problem. They reach the corner, and this is what's different, very different from the Rosberg-Hamilton-Austria incident. They reach the corner. They're about a third of the way into the corner. So already we're in a different situation. Your lanes at this point are curved in the same shape as the corner. And Ricciardo holds a perfect, geometrically brilliant lane line, which is giving Bottas ample space up the inside to hold his own line.
Just like Bottas, Hamilton did in Austria.
No, they were on the straight at that point. And Rosberg was going straight as his lane was going straight. So that's why it's different. Anyway, and Bottas obviously had no grip at the front. He locked up, he ran wide, he understeered into the side of Ricciardo. Bottas was the one moving towards the other car. And just with my wording originally again, it's about who is moving towards whom relative to the shape of the part of the track they're occupying.
Well, it made
clearly Bottas's fault.
It made a lot of sense on the inside because there's nowhere to go. But when you're talking about the contact really being towards the outside, surely Bottas can go as wide as he wants. He kind of owns the corner, doesn't he?
No, not if there's another car next to him. You have to stay in your lane if there's another car next to you. You're not allowed to move towards them. You're not allowed to occupy the same space as they're occupying.
Trumpets, tell him.
Well, actually, I was going to jump in with some chat room
Do it.
Threat. You've been threatened by the chat room.
Not the first time.
Daniel Drury is pointing out he only lives 10 minutes away and might very well come crash your podcast. Thank you very much for saying bad things about his Australian friend.
You'll never figure out which bright blue shed is mine. Damn it.
Anyway. Whose fault is it? Yeah, no, it's definitely Bottas' fault. Ricciardo left him plenty of room and he misunderestimated his breaking point, because he had not only tires that he shouldn't have been on, but was also missing probably a much larger piece of his front wing than even he realized.
I was just going to add a comment that Bottas made in a post-race interview when he was actually blaming Ricciardo for the incident. And Bottas said, he should have known I didn't have as much downforce because my front wing was broken. That was one of the weakest excuses for causing an incident I've ever heard. The other person should have known that I was going to be out of control and career into the side of them.
See, I was going to say I saw some Mercedes fans who won't be named making that argument I can't believe that the driver would make that argument himself. And I'm also very sorry, Spanners. My dog is barking in her sleep in the background. So that may require an edit.
Hang on a minute. Judge's ruling. We're going to allow it because I think that dog has sort of become part of the show over the last couple of months. So then.
Oh, there's been some good feedback every debut.
I mean, if we've allowed Brad's white duck and brown duck into the sheds, then into his garage, then I don't see why we can't have your dog. And by the way, I got banned. I wanted to call my cats White Cat and Black Cat, and they said no. And the "but Brad did it" argument didn't go down very well in my house at all. Okay, guys, so I think we'll cover the any other business in the awards. We're going to find out from Matt whether he can summarize the race in a very short amount of time. But first of all, I would just like to recommend a thing from one of our friends, Patrick Green, who is in our Slack group and actually a massive podcaster in his own right. His show is a lot more popular than ours. And he has, do you not think, Nick? It is, isn't it? It's bigger.
I don't know about that. Which he has two podcasts. I listened to one of them. I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, this one is Just Winging It. And it's two 30-something dads exploring poopy diapers, the meaning of life, and along the way, they cover quantum levitation, child sociopaths, charismatic masseuses, frightening turkeys, sleeping in parking lots, and the nightmare that is hardened Play-Doh. Yes, I'm sympathizing with all of this. Nick?
This podcast is hilarious. I've been listening to it at work, and he and another dad have been describing all the poop mayhem that comes with having 1 to 4-year-olds, and I'm a respectable business person in a very quiet office full of a bunch of people with PhDs and master's degrees, and I'm trying not to laugh out loud at Patrick describing like his kid pooping in the bathtub and the consistency. It's totally hysterical. Check it out. You don't have to be a parent. It's very funny.
I'm offended I haven't been invited on. It's not heard of Dad Hub. But Just Winging It is a podcast about life, glimpsed through the lens of young-ish fatherhood. Each week, John and Patrick tackle a new topic and come to the inevitable conclusion that no one has any control over anything. And life is complicated chaos. No, complete chaos. And that reality is as hilarious as it is beautiful. Just Winging It is available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and all popular podcatchers. The new episode drops every Sunday night. More at www.justwingingitpodcast.com. Let's go over to Matt to find out if he can summarize this race, I don't know, in 60 seconds.
Yes. Yes, I can. And here we go. Lights out! Hamilton, good start! But shuts down Raikkonen! Sainz by Vettel! Vettel by Sainz! Verstappen takes Sainz wide! Verstappen, P5! Vettel gets Raikkonen, P3! Ericsson hits Ricciardo! Perez hits Leclerc! Leclerc out! Magnussen, P7! Verstappen loses power! Verstappen out! Verstappen, naughty on the radio! Horner, naughtier on the radio! Ricciardo gets Alonso, P10! Raikkonen has no drinks! They discuss this for a while. He eventually is told not to use the button. Ricciardo gets Hulkenberg, P9. Raikkonen pits. It's slow. Bottas pits. Hamilton pits. Ricciardo gets Gasly, P5. Raikkonen pits again. Bottas doesn't. Vettel, traffic. Vettel pits. Slow. Vettel behind Bottas. Van Dorn out. Virtual safety car. No one pits. Verstappen gets Bottas, P2. Bottas hits Vettel. Raikkonen gets Bottas. Ricciardo gets Bottas. Bottas hits Ricciardo. Ricciardo gets Bottas. Checkers. Hamilton wins. Oh, wait. Bottas penalty.
That's right. Hamilton wins the 2018 Hungarian Grand Prix and stretches out into the lead. How far in the lead is he in the championship now, Nick? You know numbers and stuff.
Oh, dear. It's like 217 to 183, maybe. Is that 42.
Yeah, wouldn't have predicted this a few races back. It's certainly a turnaround. And as we've seen, though, the last few seasons, you can claw back a deficit like this. So we're sat here all as a mixture of Hamilton and Mercedes and Ferrari and Vettel fans sitting and wondering who we think is going to prosper in the end. Who do we think is in the driving seat of the championship? I cannot shake off this feeling that Ferrari are going to lag behind at some point because technically that is what's happened. That has been their trend for the last 4 or 5 years, is to lose the development race. Matt, why are you so sure that it's different this season?
I am convinced that Ferrari has everything it needs to win, except for the actual luck of winning. And I had when I was a young boy and played soccer, which we like to call it over here, I had a coach who flat out told me after a game, I'd rather have a player that's lucky than good. And I feel like at this moment, the momentum, the racing luck is just turning against them. When they should be building a lead against any eventuality, they find themselves behind, even though they have better equipment. And that just doesn't mean good things, because every new race is a chance for Mercedes to catch back up and make their life harder.
So do we think Red Bull are completely out of it?
Oh, yeah. They were never in it to begin with.
You don't think so? I maybe they weren't in the title hunt, but they were up there really making a mess of themselves, and in a good way. Whereas now you're just thinking, are they going to be sticking their nose in ahead at Abu Dhabi? Are they going to be affecting this title fight?
We have seen them win, two races? They might win another, but it seems like to me, if you look at the deficit between them and Ferrari and Mercedes, that it's gone up to nearly a second. And that's an awful lot, and suggests to me that perhaps they're focusing more on integrating the Honda into next year's package than they are doing a whole heck of a lot with the rest of their season.
Yeah, excellent segue. I was just going to say, there's one key difference between the last couple of seasons where Red Bull had excellent late development and this one, in that they are switching power unit providers next season. And I find it very hard to believe that Renault is going to be delivering them all sorts of upgrades this year that are going to catch them up to the front, especially after all the kind words that they had to say about them on air today.
Bradley Philpott.
At the risk of throwing away my pony award later on, can I please read you out a clean version of Max Verstappen's radio rant?
Please do.
Okay, I'm going to replace the naughty words with clean words that start with the same letter. So Max said, "Can I not just go ahead and fry it? I don't care if this engine blows up. What a frustrating joke all the time with this silliness, honestly."
And they're not shy. They're not shy at all. And Christian Horner was not shy when he came to talk to Sky afterwards. Red Bull and Renault are now at war. And we noticed, didn't we, with Ricciardo's upgrade, that he didn't get all the components that were upgraded. And Red Bull are openly hostile about the Renault engine they've got. Now, I'm going to say this. Missed Apex podcast understands that. And we remember the last time I said that, right? Missed Apex podcast understands that Red Bull feel they have tangible evidence that since they made the Red Bull deal, their Renault power units are down on power. So that is not me saying that. This is something I understand. Now, when you look at the relationship between Renault and Toro Rosso at the end of the last season, Matt, Toro Rosso were openly accusing Renault of scuppering them with spare parts and engine and power and settings and all sorts. And now that same kind of tone is creeping in again.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised it is. Because, frankly, if you look at the deficit, it is a bit interesting that they have gotten farther away as Renault has continued to develop the engine. We do know that for reasons that remain unexplained, they are sticking with the not new version of the MGUK because they feel like the new one is no more reliable than the old one. At least they understand how to use the old one for maximum advantage and profit. But, you know, you could make the argument that lack of development on Renault's side is responsible for them being further behind. But you could equally make the argument that Renault is not making their life any, well, I don't know, shall we say simpler for legal reasons?
Yeah, please.
I think that's probably a good way to go. But I do love Horner's comment that he was looking forward to talking to a beatable and getting the excuses this time for the engine failing, given the millions of dollars that they're spending on it. Yeah. Yeah. So I sense that'll be a fun meeting to be listening to.
Well, wasn't it the MGUK that failed on Max's car today?
I think that's what it was. I didn't confirm it though.
I think so. Yeah. I think
so. Whose fault is that then? If they chose not to use a newer one, right?
Well, it was new in the sense that it was fresh from the factory, but new is not new in the sense as they didn't go with the upgraded specification.
It's still not their fault that Renault haven't built a good enough one for them. You know, even if it's the older spec, they're still paying for stuff on the basis that it will last as long as it's supposed to last.
That's right.
I would love to know what Red Bull could possibly do with this alleged tangible evidence, like what that would mean from a administrative or legal or whatever. I'd love to hear some legal analysis on that.
Well, it is kind of interesting because in the regulations, they are required now to give all the manufacturers required to give teams the same specification and access to the same engine modes that the manufacturers, that the works teams themselves are entitled to. And we've seen that helping some of the midfield teams. But funnily enough, not so much Red Bull.
So we've been diverted. We went down a tangent there. So we're a bit split then. So you still think Ferrari are still in with a chance? I think Mercedes are going to stretch their legs in the second half of the season. I know we're already into the second half of the season. I think that Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton are in a better shape to fight in a title scrap that is a two-way title scrap than are Ferrari and Vettel. I think the smart money's on Hamilton and Mercedes at this point. Let's give out some awards for this weekend, though. Thing of the weekend. Who should we pick on first? Who's looking down saying, don't pick me, it's Bradley Philpott. Who's your thing of the weekend?
I wasn't saying don't pick me at all. I was looking for my phone where I've prepared an answer. Thing of the weekend, qualifying being wet. Qualifying was really exciting. I really, really enjoyed that session.
It was really good. Like, it was genuinely, like, really good, entertaining TV. It's a, you know, we talk about the sprinklers and stuff, but when those things come along, they're worth it, aren't they? But it's a novelty as well.
Yeah, I was saying to my other half, I don't think I can remember ever seeing a proper qualifying session where the full wets were used for a session. It's like, what are these blue-coloured sidewalls?
And did she care?
No, she didn't care.
No, mine neither. But what was interesting for me is that nobody had practiced in the wet there. So they were all kind of having to feel their way in real time. And I'm going to get accused of being a fanboy, but, you know, Lewis Hamilton, interchangeable conditions, into full wets, completely unknown territory. He rose to the top there. When things are unexpected and changing, Lewis Hamilton has the feel to get it onto pole.
And can I just say, actually, just a bit of kudos to Bottas for only being 0.2 behind in those crazy conditions. Because Hamilton is obviously sublime in those terrible conditions. Bottas wasn't that far away. If he didn't have, you know, the class of the field as his teammate, we'd have all been hailing how amazing Bottas's wet lines were in that session. And he beat the Ferraris to pole in terrible conditions.
And Bottas is one of my things of the weekend, and not just because I wanted to give him a massive hug and push Natalie Pinkham away. You leave him alone, Natalie Pinkham, and just give Bottas a big bear hug and just hold him for just slightly too long. And then he's like, did you take a sniff then? I'm like, yes, your hair, it smells of fine finished fragrance and perfumes. But yeah, he gets my thing of the weekend because you're right. He did do well, and he was given a job to do by Mercedes, whether he knew it or not, but he did do it. He had 4-time world champion Sebastian Vettel in a very fast Ferrari in dry conditions behind him. He had aging tyres and he held on for a long time. So Bottas gets one of my things of the weekend. I've got a few. Brad, is that the chat room speaking up?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that Jos Terhorst in the chat room said that, and I'd have to check this, but I'm going to believe him. Out of the last 9 wet races, Hamilton has won all 9.
Has there been that many since Brazil 2016?
I don't know quite how he's judging it. Maybe if the wet tires were used at any point, I don't know. Josh, maybe you can enlighten us.
Yeah, it just seems like a lot. But Dom Byrne in the chat room had a thing of the weekend that I thought was good. It's along the lines of Brad's, but a little bit more specific in that the session was not red flagged. And a big thank you to the stewards for that.
Yeah, it was really good. Nick, since you're speaking, who was your thing of the weekend?
I rather enjoyed the battle between Ricciardo and Magnussen, and I loved Ted Kravitz's comment that an unstoppable force was coming after an immovable object, and just very well put. Sometimes I think maybe he and Crofty should switch and maybe he should do more of the talking. Maybe they should cut to Crofty for little snippets. Brad shaking his head. No? Okay.
The thing is, Magnussen did defend really well, and he would have been my other thing of the weekend. I had a cheeky bet on him to finish in the top six. He had a bad pit stop in the end. Haas, come on, guys. How many more points are you going to throw away? Do it a bit better, because you're just on the cusp of being brilliant. Nick, we had a series of things that you noticed. Nick notices things. You had a couple more, actually.
That's so helpful. Thank you, Spanish. Yes, Nick, over to you to discuss the topics about the stuffs. Can you repeat the part of the stuffs where you said about the things? I do have another thing to talk about. Max Verstappen's radio, possible contender for a Pony Award. We'll get there. But he was being interviewed after the race, and somebody pointed out that, you know, there was a lot of bleeping going on in your radio message, and I loved it. He just said, you know, I really wish they wouldn't do that. It'd be a lot better to listen to if it was unedited.
To be honest, and as far as I'm concerned, if you listen back to that tirade on Sky, it was not beeped very well. You can clearly make out. In fact, I'm going to test it with my 8-year-old, because he knows what those words are. He's smart enough not to say them in front of me, because you get clipped around the ear, a metaphorical one, as far as you know. And I'm going to say, what words was he saying? Because it was really obvious. It was really badly beeped.
Well, he was just saying the F word.
I thought I already pointed out exactly what he said.
Yeah, you didn't get all that from that?
True thing. Okay, Matt Trumpets, who was your thing of the weekend?
Well, I think I have to go with the chat room first. Chucking up that Force India being in administration is the thing of the weekend for JBJ 1138. And yeah, for me, it was really tough. But in the end, I'm going to have to go with Pierre Gasly finishing. Was it P6 that he wound up? Yeah, it was P6. Amazing drive for the Toro Rosso and the Honda. But it's closely rivaled by Haas moving up in the Constructors' Championship ahead of Force India now by 7 points.
We'll definitely talk about the Force India administration over the summer. But as far as I can tell, it looks like Perez might be the thing of the weekend for saving Force India. I mean, that's certainly the narrative he's putting across. I think in brief, if I understand this, basically him being one of the major creditors, instead of kind of suing, waiting for them to go bankrupt and just claiming his money back, he has invoked administration along with Mercedes to say, actually, it's in administration. We're the creditors. The administration team, though, sell it as a going concern, and therefore Force India can continue to operate and look for a buyer. So potentially, if I've understood it right, Perez, you know, thing of the weekend for that. Are we onto the bad thing yet? We are, aren't we? Sadly, missed Apex Award. Matt, do you want to go first?
Missed Apex Award. You caught me off guard, because I was going to throw up one more chat room contribution to thing. But if you want
Go for it.
That would be Hamilton analyzing his own pole lap. And I have to agree with Lance Lassen there. That was really beautiful. And I hope that Sky continue to do that with pole winners as the season progresses.
Yeah, but how much was he just sticking the knife into all his competitors? Everybody else was going here, but I went here because it was faster. And then on the next corner, hey, look, this is where everyone else goes. And this is where I went, because I'm aces. go on then. Let's have your bad thing award. And chat room, throw us some bad stuff. Matt, bad thing, and then Brad.
My bad thing has to be Renault power units, because how many more do we have to see fail before they finally figure it out?
So the chat room's missed Apex is basically Red Bull. Yeah, they're basically saying Red Bull missed Apex. I mean, it's a dreadful qualifying session, sending Ricardo out on the first on the wrong tires, and Q1 didn't make Q3, and I was just going to say, I think the engine failure for Max kind of gave them somebody to point the finger at and kind of distract from the fact that they weren't doing too well themselves before that.
Brad.
Okay, so here's my missed apex. Picture the scene. You're at a hot track and, you know, you're partial to cool things, and you're driving along and you get a few laps into the race and you're getting pretty hot, pretty worn out, and you press your drinks button. And nothing happens. Not even warm liquid comes out. Nothing happens. And because the team forgot to plug it in. So that's my missed Apex Award goes to Ferrari for forgetting to connect Raikkonen's drinks bottle.
They don't care if he lives or dies, do they? Like, whose wife did he snog? It's an afterthought, isn't it?
They absolutely don't care.
Did you catch his comment after the race, though? He's like, Ah, look, man, if that's going to cause you a problem, then you are already way too far gone to begin with. Whatever. It didn't really matter.
Oh, it just feels like he is just the forgotten child. Like, they'll sort Vettel out, and if there's any time left at all, yes, they'll put wheels on Kimi's car as well. Nick, missed Apex Award for you?
Well, and the steering wheel as well. Missed Apex for me is the Red Bull qualifying setting out Danny on the softs. It just didn't make any sense whatsoever. He almost didn't make out of Q1.
Matt, you look bewildered.
I am, because for some reason I've just been signed out of the chat. I don't understand how that happened. But
we'll feature the solution to that on Missed Apex Sorts Out Technical Problems Part 435. But let's go to Pony Awards then.
Danny, I want a pony. And I want it now.
I think Max Verstappen's a pretty obvious one. Do we have any others? Brad?
Yeah, it's pretty easy one. Alonso in qualifying. A few people in the chat room have called for this as well. I don't have the exact quote, but it ended with something like, I don't care. Put whatever tires you want, mate. Even if we have a rocket ship, we won't go any faster.
But is he wrong?
No. Trumpets?
Right. Well, for me, and this was such a minor thing, and it was probably missed by everybody, but there was a great radio message from Lance Stroll about his rear tires, in which he basically said, they're not working at all. And the team said, well, we're looking at the data and they look okay to us. He goes, you don't know what you're talking about. Look again.
Ouch. I was like,
yeah. No, your rears aren't working because you broke your only brand new wing that made the whole car work properly. And so you're stuck with a car that doesn't work. And that's what it is that's making you crazy.
Is that a real quote from him? Did he really say that? I've got a pretty low opinion of the guy, but did he really say that to the team? You don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I don't know if he said, I don't remember if you don't know what you're talking about, but that was pretty much what was implied in the radio conversation. Like, well, you might be looking at the data, but I'm driving the tires and I'm telling you that there's something wrong with them. They're not working properly. But
his dad's going to buy him a new car anyway. So,
yeah. Daddy, I want a Force India and I want it now.
The most infuriating thing about the entire sport is that boy. I'm sorry, I don't want to go on a rant, but I'm going to go on a small rant. Oh my God. It's to have someone who's got so much opportunity and is in such a privileged position and, you know, basically has their future guaranteed through no good reason. You know, he's got absolutely no legitimate reason to get annoyed at anyone for anything. He needs to drive the car better and keep quiet, basically. Yeah, absolutely the most annoying thing in the world. Sorry about that.
Well, he came in, and one of the things initially was that he was nice and friendly and he had sort of a humility, but his patience seems to have run out now. And I would opine, and I don't mean to be offensive, that growing up in privilege makes you expect. It gives you a certain expectation, Matt.
Yeah, well, I'd say more to the point, it tends to make everything else not your fault. And throughout school, I don't know. Over here, private school is the school you pay for. Public school is the school you go to for free. But in private school, it can never really be your fault because the parents are paying the bill and it's the customer. Now the parents are the customers. It's not the same as it used to be when I was a kid. Get off of my grass.
And that's the thing. You know, I think we said similar things about Jolyon Palmer, who really isn't in that same league as Stroll at all. Neither is Ericsson, by the way, who we gave a really hard time last year. I've barely been annoyed by Ericsson at all this year. But you're right. He is a customer of Williams and he will be.
Yeah.
A shareholder of Force India effectively next season.
It's not about even his pace. The fact that he's not brilliantly fast is one thing and it kind of adds to it, but it's the attitude. You just because things aren't going well, you don't have to be petulant. You don't have to be ungrateful. You need to be a professional sportsman. You're in a position of massive privilege. Get on with the job at hand. If you are multiple world champion and you really know what you're talking about and you've proven yourself and you've done that, whether or not you've come from privilege, then you've got a little bit of a right to demand things. But when you're in his position, you've done nothing in the sport. Drive the car better. Keep quiet.
Tell you what, Matt, have you been keeping track of the chat room? Do we have an award to give out to them?
Oh, yeah, we do. We do. Let's see. Starting with Dom Byrne replying, in essence, Kemi's strategy is defined by a random number generator after Seb's strategy meeting.
Yeah, I completely imagine that.
And we have Phil Allen in with thing of the week, McLaren gearbox failing again.
Oof. And to be fair, if it wasn't for a bit of strategy, both McLaren Renaults would have been behind the two Hondas, and they were for a lot of the early part of the race. And on performance, I don't think McLaren have got anywhere to hide at the moment. So who's our winner of comment of the week?
It's got to be Dom Byrne for, in essence, Kimi's strategy is defined by a random number generator after sub-strategy meeting. Of the
week. Remember to tune in to next week's show where you will hear that played live by Mrs. Spanners. You will see Matt Trumpets in real life if you tune into the live stream. I think we're going to try and live stream it. I'm not sure. No promises. Right. But Bradley Philpott, Chris Rainbow Sparkle Stevens is going to be there. Summers F1. We're going to be joined by Alex Brundle as well. So make sure you tune into us and keep touch with us over the summer. We won't let you down. Until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. Come and see us, Mist Apex Live. And also, I think the show will be unedited next week, simply because I won't have time to do anything. So not even add bleeps. So everybody be non-Verstappen-y if you can.
I'm fed up with this silliness.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.